is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, everybody. Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy Bonatoni from downtown Las Vegas, our Circa Sportsbook studio. Michael Lombardi is here. We are about 48 hours out from the start of preseason football with the Hall of Fame game on Thursday. You know it's that time of year, Michael, when you're getting the Aaron Rodgers is upset at his teammates reports in Jets training camp. Always a great headline to kick us off here because you know that stuff is sort of bound to happen this time of year, and we are now fully underway in all these training camps.
And Brock Purdy threw three interceptions yesterday, so
yes,
it must be the end of his career. That's what I read yesterday, you know. So, yeah, I mean, all these evaluations that are ongoing in training camp and who's having a good day and who's not having a good day, I think a lot of that is just noise. But, you know, we listen to it because, look in what do we have, 10 days? August the 8th, that starts it all off, really. I mean, we're going to have a game this for August the 1st, but August the 8th, we have the Carolina Panthers at New England, and we've got Detroit at the Giants. So that's always, I mean, Carolina at the Giants. So that'll be great to get us going and, you know, have football every day on the weekend.
Yes, we will. We have had a lot to fill this summer because we're waiting for football. One of our guests to kick off the show today, he is an expert at talking basically every sport. I've done a bunch of live shows with Will Hill. Great to have Will coming up on the show, kicking off our guest list, 1:30 Eastern from the Shoulda Bet More podcast and frequent VSiN contributor. Then we'll continue our individual team previews today. Michael's burning questions as we'll talk Pittsburgh Steelers. Gary Dulock from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette joins at 2:15 Eastern, then right into Indianapolis camp. Mike Chappell from Fox and CBS in Indianapolis, Colts beat reporter there, joining us at 2:30. But we will begin the show talking a little news or noise.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise?
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise. Noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
And a solid list for us today. We'll start with New England camp, where there is actually a sort of news of the day piece to this, Michael, I want to get to in a second, involving one of the key members of the defense and some of the back and forth that happened yesterday in camp. But first off, it's new head coach Gerard Mayo admits that he really hasn't had much communication with Bill Belichick since taking the reins as head coach. Here was the soundbite from Coach Mayo.
Did Bill Belichick reach out to you when you got, after you got the gig, after it was announced?
So that's a tough question. We haven't had a lot of communication since I've been here. And honestly, for me, my focus is the players. It's all about the players. And I learned a lot from Bill. I honestly did. X's and O's, and also, you know, structure and practice and things like that. But like I said, it's a different time. It's a different era. And,
yeah,
and hopefully we can have that same success.
So TLDR, Michael, no, there's not been any communication there.
Well, why would there be? I mean, Bill has basically brought Mayo into the league, let him be the linebacker, taught him how to play the position, brought him into coaching, spent time the last 2 years preparing him to become a head coach. I think the phone rings two ways, you know. I don't think it's a hard question at all. You know, everything that Mayo has done since Bill has left the building is to try to distance himself from Bill. So why would Bill want to call, or why would Bill call? I mean, I think Mayo's going to wish he had called Bill. But Bill's done everything that he could, and that's usually the way Bill operates. He's tried to make other coaches successful, whether it's Brian Daboll, whether it's Josh McDaniels. He's welcomed them in and coached them just like he has Mayo. But now Mayo, as Al Davis used to tell me all the time, Ben, at some point, kids, you're going to have to play in the game, mm-hmm. and Mayo's going to have to play in the game. And we saw yesterday that Judon's not happy with how he's playing the game, and this is going to go and manifest itself forward. Gottschall hasn't done anything at their training camp. They've got a bunch of injuries, some of them self-inflicted, whether it's Barmore coming off of a problem, Tavai having another recurrence of a knee injury. You know, the list goes on and on. So it's going to be fascinating to sit back and watch as you replace the greatest coach of all time with a man with very little experience.
And it also leads into what you just mentioned, the name Matthew Judon, one of the keys to that defensive line and unit as a whole, who yesterday, very, very animated, the report from Mike Rice, Patriot beat reporter for ESPN, talking very, very emotionally with head coach Gerard Mayo, with the new VP of player personnel and Elliot Wolf, and also the director of player personnel, Matt Groh. Contract still up in the air for Gerard Mayo, is one of his top linebackers in Matthew Judon. Yet to get it done, though. And it also kind of speaks to, yeah, it's a new era, right? Would this have happened if Bill Belichick's on the sideline? I kind of think not.
No. Yeah, no, it wouldn't have happened. They would have been way more organized. But look, here's the reality. Judon did a really good job last year of trying to keep the young players in tune, specifically Barmore, who was, you know, kind of get him in line. And really, Judon is responsible for Barmore having this incredible contract, certainly for a guy who's had durability issues throughout his NFL career. So I think Peppers, too, just got a contract extension. Look, they need Judon. They have a ton of cap room, but they have to stand alone. You know, one thing I think you feel, you know, it's always easy to think you can replace a legendary coach. Try.
It's such a good way to look at it for a New England team that has a lot of question marks here in 2024. Final year of a contract calls for a base salary of $6.5 million for Judon, who had the season-ending injury in week four last year. Okay, more news or noise. Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes. This is the quote we have. Not necessarily when the question was, is Patrick Mahomes underpaid? I think we do a great job of managing my money to be able to pay me a lot of money and keep a good team around me. For Patrick Mahomes, who was able to restructure his deal last offseason, and now the $210+ million that he's getting is now coming in. It'll be as late as 2026 as of the current structure of the deal. And Mahomes, something you touched on yesterday, Michael, clearly trying to put team first in this instance and keep Kansas City as competitive as humanly possible going for a third straight Super Bowl.
You know, I think he's such a great teammate. He understands the importance of winning far exceeds individual honors. I wish more athletes had this. Look, he's not underpaid. He's not the highest paid, but he's not underpaid. He knows he can make more money outside the arena of football doing other things, representing Adidas or whatever he does. But to me, winning is all that matters. Look, Dan Marino would trade in everything to have that one opportunity to put a Super Bowl ring on his finger. Something as great as he was, he couldn't do.
For the entire roster for Kansas City, where do you have them power rated 1 to 32 as we start the year?
Well, you know, it starts with the quarterback, and obviously he's the best quarterback in the league. But overall, their talent level, I mean, if you put somebody else behind this offensive line, I'm not sure it would be at an elite level, especially at the tackle position where Taylor, and we're not sure who the left tackle is, whether it's the rookie from BYU or Moses from Oklahoma. So Morris from Oklahoma, excuse me. So I think to me, and the receiving core is average. I think Kelce, whether he can play at his age and his off season, that remains to be seen. I think they're a good roster, certainly, but you know, that cherry on top is called Patrick Mahomes.
And that's what is always fascinating about breaking down Kansas City, how much of a roster ranking is purely just Patrick Mahomes, how much is the rest of a group that has had a lot of holes to fill on, especially on the rest of the offense, like you point out, running back, not anything to get excited about either as you go down the list on KC. Okay, next news or noise piece here as we start the show. Ah, yes, the New York Giants. We're ready. I know you've been excited for the end of the offseason version of Hard Knocks. That is not too far away. We're going to talk some Giants in depth tomorrow. But quarterback Tommy DeVito, that is up to the Giants to make that decision, make that gamble. If they were to cut him for Tommy Cutlets, if they decide to cut me and I get scooped up, I don't get to make that decision to say afterwards if somebody grabs me, no, I want to stay here. It's everything for the front office. Gamble, potentially, for the Giants to cut Tommy Cutlets, Michael.
I don't know if it is a gamble. I mean, here's the reality. They were looking for a backup. They tried to sign Tyrod Taylor back, and they brought in Drew Lock, who, you know, they had Tommy DeVito on the team. Now, you know, understanding they need three, there's no question, because of Daniel Jones's health and durability the last two seasons, or three seasons. He played most of the games in 22. But for me, you know, I think Tommy's getting himself a little bit over his skis. You know, it wasn't exactly... do you want to go back and go through some of those moments where I think they gained minus 9 yards against the Jets in passing? Do you remember that?
How about the panache, Michael, when you're, I guess, a...
the panache,
when
yes.
You're a quarterback of Tommy DeVito's. Look, you gotta sell yourself. Look, if this was a team that at least had something to get excited about roster-wise, you would kind of say, okay, what are you doing here? At least because Tommy DeVito, I think he understands. He's like, yeah, there's really not much here we can go off of for the Giants, so I'm going to make my voice heard. This, to me, most fascinating potential news or notes piece, and you mentioned to start the show, Brock Purdy struggles yesterday in training camp, few picks there for San Francisco. This was a interview he had with Mike Silver, the San Francisco Chronicle, saying, I want to be dominant. It's having that Tom Brady kind of feeling late in the game. It always felt like Tom was just going to take over and not make it close. I feel like I can get to that. Always ambitious when you throw the Tom Brady name out there when you're a young quarterback like Brock Purdy. Already the pressure high on a guy who's been so heavily scrutinized, but I thought that was a very interesting quote he gave to one Mike Silver of the San Francisco Chronicle.
I love it because I think there is, when you study him, as good as a year as he had last year, there's room for improvement in terms of accuracy, in terms of his ability with ball location. You know, his decision-making is only going to speed up. He's going to have more rhythm within the framework. You know, Bill Walsh would say, and today we're going to talk about it later in the show, but this is the anniversary of Coach Walsh's death today in 2007. And he would often say, the first year we'll teach the player the system. The second year, we in third year, we develop those skills within the system. And I think Purdy's got a lot of room for improvement on top of how good he's actually been. I mean, he's going to get better and better, and Kyle's going to develop more confidence. And you could see it on the tape. We talked yesterday, Ben, about Jordan Love and Matt LaFleur being worried about him. Kyle, if you watch the play calls of the 49ers, he's not worried about Purdy. He's not hiding Purdy from anybody. He hit Jimmy Garoppolo. He didn't hide Purdy. He hasn't hit Purdy.
That's the thing. The air yards, he's still pushing the ball down the field. It's not simply relying on short passes, receivers doing the rest, and the advanced metrics too. Whether you want to look at the tape, whether you want to look at the data, show Purdy was a legit top five quarterback across the board last year. People still don't want to talk about him that way. Still, it's more like borderline top 10, but a very, very good, confident quote from Purdy to start training camp. We will get into a lot of burning questions today. I'm excited to dive into two teams that are very interesting from the perspective of they could go either way really this year, Pittsburgh and Indianapolis. We'll get into Pittsburgh's burning questions when we come back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Power ratings, picks, previews, predictions. Pro, as in become a VSiN Pro subscriber and get an all-access pass to our betting tools, betting splits, and the 2024 College Football Betting Guide. Thursday's release of our College Football Guide and our previously released NFL Betting Guide will have you ready to turn a profit on the gridiron this year. And the only way to get the guides and everything we have to offer is to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. And you can do exactly that at vsin.com/subscribe. We'll also have a special release show right before our Lombardi Line edition on Thursday. Release show previewing the College Football Guide. Adam Burke will join me. Really excited for that, Michael. A lot to break down. New teams in the FBS, over 300 of them. Great to break down all of it, just like it is with the NFL. As much as we have fewer teams to focus on, it's that time of year, and it is time for some burning questions. It actually works out really well. We go to the Pittsburgh Steelers today, Michael, and we have some news even breaking as we hit the air today with rookie wide receiver Roman Wilson carted off an apparent ankle injury. And that is one of your burning questions even before this injury happened here for Wilson and the Steelers, with several key position groups looking likely to be relying upon the rookies to start this season.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, the Steelers have always done a great job of developing young receivers. They have. I mean, but it's going to put some pressure, I think, on George Pickens, who's their number one, Van Jefferson, who they signed from Atlanta, Scotty Miller, who they also signed from Atlanta, and then their fourth-round pick last year, Calvin Austin. I mean, those guys are going to have to step up. But I don't think, to me, this is going to be a team that wants to be overly in 11 personnel. I know Arthur Smith took a lot of crap from the analytical community because he was never in 11 personnel down in Atlanta. Well, he really was, because Pitts, when he's on the field, is a tight end. So whether they're in two tight ends with Pitts as one of the tight ends, that's 11 personnel. Pitts isn't a tight end. He's a receiver. So, you know, how you frame it, to me, it depends on the personnel group. But with Freiermuth being as good as he is and them wanting to run the football, strong side and weak side, I think they're going to have to figure out who will be the slot guy. Pickens on the outside, is that going to be Jefferson? And when a guy has an ankle, you feel like you always have a chance to get him back at some point, maybe 3 or 4 weeks. The problem is with rookies, Ben, when rookies miss training camp, it's especially rookie receivers, it's hard to get them inundated into the offense.
Great example we saw a couple years ago, Christian Watson in Green Bay misses most of camp, and it took basically the first two-thirds of the season for him to feel fully integrated, confident in the offense, and that is far from the only example we have seen of that in the past. It leads into, though, the rest of how this offense will look, where offensive line, the pieces they brought in, a lot of very quality pulling guards too, which can help some of that outside zone type action that Arthur Smith wants to bring in as a first-year OC. O-line to me looks pretty solid. Running back is a solid position, but it all always comes down to the quarterback, especially when you're asking Russell Wilson to make plays on the run, and that is your number one burning question, which is probably the only way you can really start when it comes to breaking down Pittsburgh.
Well, yeah, I mean, Russell's numbers have gone dramatically down in play action and RPO game. I think there's no, when you look at it, it's scary. And one of the things I think Russell doesn't do a very good job of is stepping up and working the middle of the pocket. You're going to hear Brady talk a lot about this. Working the pocket, climbing the ladder within the pocket is how big plays get developed, because you're going to have to move. All the great outside rushers we have in the National Football League can be avoided if the quarterback steps up. If Brock Purdy were to step up in the Eagle game, Hassan Riddick would have not hit his elbow. It would not have been a problem. But he kind of didn't climb the ladder in that game, and that's when he got hit. Wilson has not climbed the ladder in 2 and 3 years. I mean, he's looking to go right, left, and get out. That's why his yards per attempt has come way down. I think that's going to be critical for Arthur to get him to get it down the field and make some of these explosive plays, because the Steelers, for as bad as they were offensively last year, they could make some explosive plays with Warren and Pickens.
And it leads into, as well, a team that predicated themselves on ball control, being smart with the football, not turning it over. It's something, when you look at all the close games Pittsburgh played in, the turnover margin is something that really jumps out to you, and it's a question of how can you duplicate that when we know turnovers are so variant year to year.
Yeah, and Russell did a good job last year. Of all the things he didn't do in Denver, the one thing he did do was protect the football. And so that was one of why Denver was able to stay in games. See, I think Pittsburgh's a shining example of how not to lose games. I mean, think about it. You know, they were 30th in drives and ending in turnovers, which is high for a team where they only had 7 fumbles and they only threw 9 interceptions. 16 times they turned the ball over as a team last year. That's pretty remarkable, right? And even though there were a lot of 3 and outs in those drives, you know, they didn't gain any yards. They just at least protected the football. And I think, you know, when they only had 7 games above 20 points, they won all of them. And if this team can get to somehow find a way to score later in the game, and I think Arthur Smith, for whatever we want to say about him, as a head coach, I think he's a good offensive coordinator.
Doesn't the fit, too, as you think about it, it makes a lot more sense than maybe on the surface, where in general Pittsburgh has always wanted to be that physical ground-pound team. As much as Arthur Smith, yes, he does take flack from the analytics community, but he is at least bringing Pittsburgh into the modern age. Still a very run-heavy guy, yeah. But he's run-heavy in a more 2024-esque type of way that's a lot more optimal. Even if the modern numbers say you want to be passing the ball more, it seems like for Pittsburgh, they're always going to be a franchise that wants to bring in a guy who will run the ball more. At least Arthur Smith is doing it in a positive way. He's just not, you know, trucking everybody up the middle and running it right behind the center.
Yeah, I mean, he's not Matt Canada. Matt Canada was not qualified to be an offensive coordinator in the National Football League. I mean, that's pretty clear by his design. I mean, Matt Canada, remember when Matt Canada went to LSU when he was at Pittsburgh? He was at Pittsburgh originally, and they developed that tight end inside shuffle pass that almost beat Clemson down there. And then he got the LSU job, got paid a ton of money, got fired after 7 games at LSU. And then Pittsburgh, for some reason, made him an offensive coordinator with no pro experience at all. And I think that really hurt Matt's career. He wasn't really ready for that job. There was no creativity. There was no ability to design an offense to attack. See, one of the things Pittsburgh didn't do last year was to attack the adjustments within the framework of the defense. That's what good offensive coordinators do. They attack the weakness within the framework of the defense, and I think they will be. The question's going to be, Ben, they're going to have to start 2 rookies in that offensive line. Frazier, their 3rd-round pick, is going to start at center, and Fatua, I think that's how you say his name, Fantui, you know, I think he's going to have to start at right guard. I mean, that's going to be he's going to have to start right tackle. And Fantua, and Troy Fantua from Oregon, he's going to have, and certainly he can. And Broderick Jones, the kid they drafted in the first round. Think about this. They have 1st-round pick in tackles, 2 tackles. They've got 2 free agent signings at the guard, and they have a 2nd-round pick at center. They're going to be better in the offensive line, and maybe Mason McCormick, who's a really good young player, ends up starting in one of those guards. They could have 3 starting offensive linemen as rookies this year, which would set them up for the long haul in a really good way.
Especially when you factor in the rookie development that we have seen Mike Tomlin do such a masterful job of over the last decade and a half plus now for Pittsburgh. And it's why a lot of positional ranking outlets have Pittsburgh as a top 10 unit on the offensive line with a lot to like going into 2024. The big part of the defense that you have question marks of, to me, is the biggest red flag for Pittsburgh. For as much as they have held their hat on the defensive end, it's a secondary where when the front four really didn't get home last year, when opposing quarterbacks had time to throw, no team gave a higher completion percentage up than Pittsburgh. It was a near 63-64% completion rate on throws 10 yards down the field when their front four was not getting home. Secondary, to me, it's clearly bottom half of the league. How can they potentially take a step forward when you think about some of the main guys they have, you know, with a, you know, a young player to Joey Porter Jr. showing flashes last year, having a couple cornerstones, but outside of that, there's just a lot of unknowns for Pittsburgh back in the secondary.
They got to keep Minka Fitzpatrick healthy. I think that's critical, right? Last year he wasn't. They gave up way too many explosive plays. And that's typically not what Pittsburgh is famous for. Pittsburgh will let you drive it down the field. They're trying to get you into a negative play so they can utilize their pass rush and to create a problem because Watt is so good and Highsmith is good on the other side. But they're going to have to stay ahead. The biggest issue was they were in too many, they were giving up too many yards on first down in the run game, and so they couldn't really create a situation where they got negativity. One of the parts about being a great defense is to get to second and 14. And then when you put the pressure on when you do, you can't do what Indianapolis did. Remember Indianapolis on the drive of the game where Houston went down? They had them in a second and 16, but of course they played a soft coverage and they gained 14 yards. Now it's third and two. That's not what you want. You get a team in second and 16, you got to put them away. You can't let that. You can't play soft coverage and let them dink it down for 15 yards. So that's where I think Pittsburgh's going to have to gear it up and really play and get more pressure from the inside to help their two outside guys.
And there's enough to like, too, in general about Pittsburgh. If they were, say, in the AFC South, softer schedule, you'd go, you know what? You could see a path forward. I mean, this is a gauntlet. It's the hardest schedule by opposing win totals in the league. You're in the AFC North, which is so good. And while I have reason to want to get excited about Arthur Smith coming in, I still have Pittsburgh power rated fourth in the division. I have him 10th in the AFC here coming into the start of the year.
Yeah. 10th in the AFC is pretty high, too. You know, but look, they've addressed it. Look, that, you know, with them signing Deshaun Elliott, which will help their run fits, especially early in the season against the run game. They need that. Elliott's a good run defender, you know, and then Dante Jackson's got to come through for him at the corner position.
We'll get Will Hill's thoughts on the Pittsburgh Steelers, what he thinks, his outlook on the Steelers in 2024, as well as the Colts, our other team of the day. We'll get to Michael's burning questions on in a little bit. Will Hill, VSiN contributor from the Should Have Bet More podcast, joins us right after this here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number one of the Lombardi Line rolls on. I'm Ben in for Stormy rest of the week. We have Michael here. We're ready for the Hall of Fame game in a couple of days. And we also have Will Hill here as we go out to our progressive guest line right now. Great to have Will on, as always, from the Should Have Bet More podcast at Not The Will Hill. I kind of envision, Will, you right now, you're sleeping like 3 hours a night. You're just betting Olympics all hours of every single day. How true is that assessment of what your betting life is right now?
No, I have not delved into the Olympics. You gotta cut something. I mean, you gotta have a life at some point. The Olympics is just something.
He was at a Yankee game the other day.
That's right.
He was at a Yankee game the other day with the family. He had the family out there coaching the Yankees. He had to go. They called them to a Yankee stadium for a meeting because they wanted the trade deadlines. He's busy. He doesn't have time for the Olympics. He's got too much to do.
I just assume Will was making, you know, like live rugby sevens betting or something from the seats at Fenway. I saw that picture. It looked like a great time to be had by all.
But I missed him by a day because the next night, obviously last night, is when they hit, I think, six homers against the Phillies. And I was with the kids. The kids want to see, you know, Aaron Judge hit a homer and all these guys hit. I mean, they won, so can't complain. But the next night was the night to go in Philly where they just Judge hit a couple, Jazz Chisholm hit a couple. That was a pretty shocking result. Maybe the Yankees are starting to get back on track here.
Your presence just spurned them on, really, more than anything, Will, is what is obvious from that. So we did a poll yesterday here on the show on Michael's Twitter of quarterbacks from the class of 2020. If we're excluding Joe Burrow, you would rather have for the next 4 years. Justin Herbert wins pretty much in a landslide here, over 60% of the vote, with Jordan Love almost a quarter of the vote coming in second place. Will, Jalen Hurts third, Tua Tagovailoa fourth. A, any shock or surprise for you on how this poll came out? And B, who would your selection be on this?
I guess my only surprise that I know people are, I figured people maybe be a little bit more prone to recency bias and it'd be closer between Love and Herbert, because I'm a Herbert guy and I Herbert would be my guy, but he didn't play well last year and Love obviously finished the season strong. So I thought maybe he'd be a little closer, but to me, it's Herbert. I don't think he's been in a good situation. I think a lot of times, the mainstream media makes it seem like these games are one or these quarterback comparisons. It's not one-on-one basketball out there. And even Herbert versus Burrow, like look at Burrow's had a defense and a kicker that makes kicks. I mean, forget Burrow. He had Tannehill throw all those interceptions. He had his kicker make every kick against the Titans a couple years ago. That's what spurred this run, and Tyler Huntley fumbles on the 1 yard line. So there's a lot of team success. There's a lot of sometimes luck that goes into it. And I just think Herbert hasn't had a coach, hasn't had a defense, hasn't had a great supporting cast. Eckler and Allen always hurt, plays on a team with no home field advantage. You could say they're excuses, and maybe they are. Or there's not much of a difference sometimes between excuses and reasons. And to me, they're legitimate reasons why Herbert, hasn't played well. I think we'll see with Harbaugh this next era, these next few years, him go to another level. If he doesn't, then maybe you can question him. Is it just more talent? Is it just more hype than anything? But to me, I'm still a Herbert guy. I'm still a believer. We'll see if he can get some receivers around him. I know they're rebuilding that team, but I'm a Herbert believer still.
Me too. I agree with you on that. But I want to ask you a question about Joe Burrow. Yesterday we had a Cincinnati Bengal reporter on, and I asked him, with knowledge of the situation, how's the ball coming off of Burrow's hand? And he was brutally honest and said, not great. Are you worried about Burrow's injury? Have you heard?
I mean, I think you have to be. I think it has to at least be in the back of your mind, especially when you look at the win total, 10.5. Like winning 11 games, winning 11 games in the NFL is hard. A lot of things have to go right. Pretty much everything has to go right. 11-6 is a hell of a record. Now, they caught a break in the schedule with the last place schedule, Patriots, Panthers, Titans, Commanders, Giants, and the Raiders. So that's six pretty easy games in an AFC where most teams have a brutally tough schedule. Theirs is not that bad. But look, Burrow's just going to be a 70-80% version of himself. It's going to be hard to win 11 games, no matter who you're playing in. I think we're at the point where you at least have to start to question or have some concerns a little bit about Burrow's durability. I mean, it's the appendix and the calf and now the wrist. And it's like, man, he's missed a lot of time with a lot of different things. So I don't know if it's fair to call him injury prone, but if he misses time again this year, I think you start to have to wonder, like, man, can we count on this guy 17 games year in, year out? And yeah, if it's not coming off his hand well, that's obviously a concern, because that was a long time ago he got hurt. That was, what, November? So it's August now. If he's not healed by now, like if not now, then when?
One of the biggest storylines to be tracking as we continue in the training camp cycle, Cincinnati sitting the 10.5 on the win total, Will. We're talking today, Pittsburgh is part of the AFC North with Michael's burning questions. We just wrapped up 8.5, heavy juice to the under. You're hearing a lot of conjecture out there of, all right, this will finally be the year where Mike Tomlin fails to have at least a 500 season in his time as a head coach of Pittsburgh. Where do you stand on a Steeler team that has question marks at quarterback, wide receiver? We had the rookie Roman Wilson go down with injury earlier today at camp, but still with a very solid defense in general, yet a very difficult schedule as well there as the team with the longest odds to come out of the AFC North.
Yeah, to me, I still think the under is the play. And if you do like the over, you should probably bet Mike Tomlin, coach of the year, because if he can get them to 9-10 wins with that schedule, it's going to be right in the mix for the best coaching job of the season. And look, we're going to hear it 1,000 times. We've already heard it 1,000 times. We'll hear it 1,000 more. The Steelers have a tough schedule. We heard before the Super Bowl and before every playoff game last year, you have to take Patrick Mahomes getting points. Just because you hear something 1,000 times does not mean it's not true. They have a ridiculously hard schedule, not just the back half. Even early games like Atlanta at Denver is not an easy game. It's not an easy place to play in September. You can't call week one a must win, but you better get one of those first two, because if you don't bank some wins early, that's going to be tough at the other end of the schedule, the back half of the schedule. I'm not a Russell Wilson guy. I'm not a Fields guy. And the AFC, with that schedule, getting to 9 wins is asking a lot. Again, if you like the over, just take a little piece of Tomlin Coach of the Year award. He's never won, by the way. But to me, I think this is finally the year he goes under.
It's amazing. He won 10 games last year, lost to Arizona and New England at home. I mean, that's remarkable, yes. Right? And he still really won 10 games. I mean, it's just it is. Where are you on the Colts? Richardson comes back. They lost their number one sacker last year. Latua is going to have to come in and really pick it up. But their coverage in the secondary, is it going to be good enough? Do you think they can win the South?
I do think they can win the South. I mean, I think we talked about this last week with the Texans. I mean, you look at the quarterbacks the Texans beat last year. It's a lot of Bryce Young and Minshew a couple times, Ryan Tannehill, Will Levis, Zach Wilson, Russell Wilson. It's not – and they played Lamar week one and into the playoffs. Other than that, they didn't really play any good quarterbacks. Baker Mayfield, they just – it's not an impressive list. And now that's going to flip where they play a bunch of good quarterbacks. A first-place AFC schedule is the real deal. That's a tough schedule. So I'm not a Jags guy. I'm not a Lawrence guy. I would look towards Indy to win the division +320, +325. I think he's a decent bet. I just like Steichen as a coach. I think Richardson, he's got to stay healthy, but he was obviously incredibly talented. He showed his incredible talent the limited time he was healthy last year. And they're good on both lines. I think offensive lines of strength, defensive lines of strength in the dome. The crowd noise is going to help a defensive line. The Jonathan Taylor contract situation seems to be in the past decent enough. Skill guys, I don't see why they can't win 10 or 11 games. Hell, they almost won the division last year with Minshew, a yard or two away from stealing that with a backup quarterback. And think about how different the narrative would be on Houston, on Indy, on all these teams if you know the Colts were the team that won the division. I mean, Houston could have easily missed the playoffs last year, and I don't know that it would be the same hype on them this year. So to me, I'm all in on Indy. I think there's good value there for them to win the division.
All in on Indy for our Will Hill joining us on our Progressive Guest Line. A division that seems to always have perpetual cycling amidst the top of that league. Houston, back-to-back years now, a team who's won the division was last place the previous year. Houston, the latest to do that. Let's stay in the general South region of this great country, Will, and we go to some college football win totals. We'll have our college football betting guide coming out on Thursday, and there is an SEC team. It is a loaded SEC now with the additions of the Oklahomas and Texases of the world that will make this a really interesting handicap from top to bottom now. What are you doing with one team here, the Bayou Bengals of LSU? Now it's another year for Brian Kelly and big expectations as a result of him now being entrenched a little bit down in Baton Rouge. But expectations high. What are your thoughts on the LSU Tigers here? Win total set at 9 this year.
I'm going under. I'm a little bit simple. When these teams just lose so much pro talent and they have tough schedules like Michigan, like LSU, I just look towards an under. They have a quarterback that went second pick in the draft, a couple of first round receivers. They haven't played any defense under Brian Kelly. And I do wonder, too, and the schedule's not impossible. It's still in the SEC. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy to get to 10 wins. And I think at worst, you push here. If you can get a 9, pay a little extra juice for the 9.5. I think it's just going to be hard to go over that number. And I wonder, too, I said this about Lincoln Riley. I'll say this about Brian Kelly. You wonder if the fan base, hey, we lose 3 or 4 games. They're paying these guys a lot of money to lose 3 or 4 games. I don't know if that's acceptable. I don't know if that's what they signed up for when you gave these guys mega contracts. Like, hey, yeah, we'll go 8-4 and we'll have a good year. That's not the idea when you're paying all this money. So I worry about that. I just, the defense, what they lost at quarterback and receiver, I just think that's a lot to replenish, and getting to 10 in the SEC is just is going to be a tough ask. And by the way, I read some of the college football guide. Adam Burke did a hell of a job of the transfer portal stuff, with all of the, things moving around, conferences, you absolutely need it. NFL, people can kind of get by. I understand that. College, there's so many moving parts. I highly recommend checking out the college football guide.
Real quick, you going to make a play in the Hall of Fame game, or are you going to play the under?
Probably the under. It's moved a little bit. Not that 33 to 32 is a key number, but 20 to 13 is a possible final score. And this has been mainly an under game. The last 2 years it went over, but I mean, we know how this goes. This is just a complete, like, hey, let's try not to get it injured. Backup offensive linemen, backup quarterbacks, nobody plays. So it'd be under nothing, but not going too crazy with it.
Texans about a point favorite, 32.5 is the total. And we can always bring this up whenever Will's on and the preseason is about to start, Michael. Will once famously, you can say the word, Will, what you called me when I said I was not betting preseason football.
I might have called you a terrorist, but I was just kidding.
I think it was that. Now that I've had more time to reflect, I think it was a valid point. 5 now more in on preseason. Thanks to you, Will, and thanks to Michael as well. Good to see you as always, man. Be well.
All right, see you guys. Thanks for having me.
I was talking some Indianapolis Colts. We will get into Michael's burning questions for those Colts when we come back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now, check out our new look, VSiN.com, optimized for mobile and full of best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by states, betting tools, and betting guides. Right now on VSiN.com, check out Steve Mackinnon's Hall of Fame game betting preview. It's already out. He's got all the trends, all the information on who to expect to play. We'll break that down a little bit more in depth as we get in closer to Thursday's kickoff from Canton, Ohio. Would you believe this, Michael? The highest total since 2000 in the Hall of Fame game. 37.5 back when the flying St. Louis Rams. That's a high-powered offense. We're in the game against the Dolphins in 2001, but that game went under, and it is why we've seen totals really, really trend toward the under in that game in years past.
I mean, let's think about this, right? It just say Caleb Williams doesn't play, and there's probably a good chance he won't play if he does a series, right? And we're into the, you know, Davis Mills, Case Keenum era down in Houston, which they should move the football, right? But you got to believe Houston wants to work on their run game. It was so bad last year. I can't imagine that Tyler Badgett's going to lead them to any points, right? And then, you know, where they go after they pull him from the game. The offensive line for the Bears, their starters are very questionable. So that means their backups have even more questions to them. Houston's not going to start their offensive line, which means their backups aren't going to be good. See, this is the problem and why the scores are so low is because most teams don't have five good offensive linemen, let alone 10.
Sure.
And in preseason, you need to have at least 12 good offensive linemen if you're trying to evaluate a backup quarterback, particularly because he's going to be running for his life because the defensive players are always better than the offensive players in these games. So that's why I think the under is certainly in play here.
What is most notable to me, too, about the quarterback breakdown, all four quarterbacks that could potentially suit up for Houston, all of them have more career starts under their belt than the four quarterbacks on the Bears roster combined, with what we're going to see. A lot of Tyson Bagent go to the Brett Rypien, Austin Reed experiment. Quarterback definitely edge on the Houston side, but it is breaking down the backups that is so important about these preseason handicaps. At least, one team that does not have questions and marks about the offensive line, as we get into Michael's burning questions, our second team today. It's Indianapolis Colts. That is one area where you don't really have a ton of questions on. O-line, running back, very, very solid for Indy. But the big storyline is what will we see? How aggressive running the ball will the Colts be with their quarterback Anthony Richardson coming off of an injury in which he got four starts in his rookie campaign, showed flashes of brilliance in them, was also inconsistent as a passer, and how close to 100% will he be now coming back into the Shane Steichen offense, Michael? So much to unpack there on the Richardson front as camp opens.
You know, but look, let's just put this in perspective, okay? And I think this is a positive towards the Colts. Elliot, this is a real positive. Last year, they are a completed pass, a Gardner Minshew accurate pass from beating the Houston Texans. This year, Gardner Minshew is in a battle with Aiden O'Connell, and all indications are Aiden O'Connell is going to be the starter. What does that tell us about Gardner Minshew? What does that tell us about maybe how bad the Colts were, but yet the coaches helped Gardner Minshew look a lot better than he really was? I think it's a tribute to Shane Steichen here, don't you, Ben? I mean, the fact that this Gardner Minshew that gets $15 million guaranteed and the Raiders sign him as their starting quarterback and he can't beat out Aiden O'Connell, who couldn't complete a pass for three quarters against the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, who couldn't score a point against the Minnesota. I mean, anytime he played a defense that was bringing blitzes from different places, he struggled, you know, against the Chargers when the Chargers had basically quit on Brendan Staley. It was easy through for whatever he did. It made his whole year. So for me, the more I watch the Raiders and I listen to Gardner Minshew and saying he's not going to beat out O'Connell, I'm saying I think Steichen should have been coach of the year last year based on what he was almost able to accomplish.
And Minshew ends up
so now,
22nd in the completion percentage. Completion percentage over expectation, EPA per play, whatever metric you want to look at. Minshew, bottom 10 quarterback last year. The stats don't lie on Minshew's limitations.
How did he get money? How did he get that much money? It's remarkable. Look, I always thought Minshew was a middle reliever. You bring him in, he plays game 6, 7, and 8. You know, maybe you can win two of them, but the more he plays, the less effective he becomes. The more innings pitched, the less effective. And so let's get back to Richardson. Like, if Richardson's just half as good as his talent indicates he can be, this Colt team could be really good this year. Now, I worry about their pass defense tremendously. Right? Because I think what Will Hill said is so damn true, right? Look, they gave up 350 to Derek Carr, 337 to Stroud, 303 to O'Connell. I mean, O'Connell threw for 286 against them. Think about at home, like on their own field, he threw for 286. How good are they if they can't rush? So my concern isn't Richardson for the Colts. It's Gus Bradley and his defense.
Now I look at the positional rankings too. I mean, hard to find a reason to believe Indianapolis is not a bottom five secondary this year. We're in that mark across the board, especially if you look down the stretch with some of those passing numbers against them last year. And think about the division they're in too, where you expect, I mean, you think about if you're viewing this AFC South as being relatively wide open, you have a Houston offense that is predicated on the deep ball, high explosive plays down the field, a Jacksonville team with a very aggressive play caller in Doug Peterson who will want to push the ball downfield with a newly extended Trevor Lawrence at quarterback, and even Tennessee, a team that we figured to look vastly different than the just pure ground and pound game under Mike Vrabel the years past now with a offensive-minded head coach as a former OC in Brian Callahan. Like, if you want to win this division, you're going to have to limit the explosive plays on the back end of the ball, and that's where, to me, my biggest concern comes in on Indy when you think about the pure competition they have within their division. It's a lot of high-powered passing attacks.
No question. You know, and can Bradley have anything in his arsenal to make the adjustment? Does he have anything within his framework of his defense to give them some help? And you know, and Chris Ballard, who we had on the pod, he was clear. I mean, he stuck with, he was going to play the guys. He signed players back once he didn't get anybody. Now, I mean, I think Latua is going to be a really good player, but can we expect him to carry the load as much as that? I think that's rather unrealistic, don't you?
Yeah, it's, you're talking about a rookie, just assuming you're going to come in, and granted, he's the second favorite on a lot of the odds boards to be rookie of the year, a lot too, coming out of UCLA, but it's a big ask to come right away and say, oh yeah, you're just going to step in and fortify a unit. The news too yesterday, if you missed that, Samson Ebukam, he's out for the year already, Achilles tear, a brutal break for a guy who's been a really solid core of that defensive line, so automatically, we always are talking about depth here, Michael. As much as the front line looks really good for Indy, there is some question, too, on how much depth really is there now that you lose a key rotational guy.
No question. And, you know, and everything we talked about, the two teams that play this style of defense ranked 22nd and 23rd, the Colts and the Bears, in defensive acumen last year. And both of their defensive front, the Bears specifically, I mean, Sweat led their team in sacks with 6.5. There's no one else in the defensive front for the Bears that could actually really give Sweat some help. That no three technique, no nose tackle. The Bears have been on Madden football. They've been trying to sign every receiver. I mean, look, they were willing to trade up for Rhone Odunze. You know, forget about Byron Murphy. They never even entertained the thought of having a three technique or Latua having another edge. They wanted another receiver even after they signed Keenan Allen, even after they traded for DJ Moore. So, you know, they're playing Madden. I don't know how they're going to get it all done because they can't rush the passer either.
Sure thing. The linebacker core, too, from that perspective, there's a big gap between what the linebackers look like in run defense versus pass defense, where, you know, granted, Zaire Franklin led all linebackers in the league at 132 solo tackles last year. He also missed among the most of anybody in the league, and he, EJ Speed, those guys were solid. You look at the run-pass splits, really good against the run, but you just question already with the weak secondary behind him, they were average at best in pass coverage last year.
Well, they're spot droppers. They don't read coverages. They're not pattern readers. They don't really play. They never want to gauge in man. They want to spot, read the quarterback's shoulders, and then break on the football and use their team speed. It's about the ball, the ball, the ball. They want to create turnovers. They, you know, one thing about Eberflus and Bradley, they don't care about yards. They care about how many turnovers do we get. And when you look at it, that both teams were not great at creating turnovers because they lack team. Turnovers are created by team speed. That's where turnovers are. When you're fast on defense and your defensive linemen chase the ball from behind, they tackle, they make a collision, there comes a fumble. And that team speed is really when you look at the fumbles created. But Indy doesn't have enough team speed in their front to really say, oh, wow, we're going to create turnovers.
I certainly believe the gap is a lot tighter than people would think in the AFC South between team 1-3. I still have Indy third, though, as far as, you know, my ratings still open up the year. Granted, most favorable strength of schedule based on opposing win totals, but third toughest rest edge this year. A lot of short weeks, a lot of games against teams with extra rest are coming off bye. And when you talk about a division that's that tight, you think about the specific weakness relative to strengths of other teams in their division. It's why, as much as I want to get behind Indy, I love the excitement of Anthony Richardson. I'm just not totally sold yet in this second year for Shane Steichen.
you're not going to get me sold on the defense. But I am sold on Steichen, because if you can win that many games with Gardner, who can't beat out Aiden O'Connell, I'll give you that one.
Yeah, like an 8.5, that feels spot on as far as a win total team that should be right there threatening for one of those wild card spots, possibly a division as well in 2024. A lot to get to in hour number two. We'll revisit some top headlines and set up our hour two guests when we come back.